All right, so we're going to talk about the past experience with content deployment. Has anybody here ever used content deployment? Quite a few of you. 2007, 2010, very familiar, yeah, good times, right? Thing works great. Is somebody laughing?
Yeah, that's what I heard.
How could you laugh at our products? That's terrible, thank you. Okay, so content deployment in 2007 and 2010 was basically you had an authoring site where you created your content, you versioned it, you get a major version, and then you would replicate that to a staging site or our production site. Good example, that would be a website, like an external website. I know I shouldn't mention customer names. I've dealt with a lot of these content deployment critsits, so I know many of them. But basically what would have, you could have like 10 gigabyte site collection with all your content in it, and then that would have to get replicated over to the staging site, and with staging you would just do a big, basically a cross-check, make sure, verify everything got over there properly, and then it would replicate one more time to production. And however long it took to get the 10 gigabytes over is how long it's going to take, but after that, it would do updates every 15 minutes. So if you were making a change, for instance, later on down the road, put a new page in, it would take 15 minutes to 30 minutes to replicate to the staging, and then 15 to 30 minutes to production. So the time between a change and when it gets to production could be up to an hour. We were going to demonstrate how WCM now in 2013 is drastically better.
Yeah, to add on to that, I think that's kind of that legacy model of web content management, the content deployment, the content by query web part, the lack of analytics in terms of taking advantage of user profiles, search analytics, et cetera. So I'm sure you've been hearing these throughout a number of sessions, the kind of the future direction of a intranet portal. And we're going to cover a lot of those capabilities. And as a side note, for a recent customer, I did a lot of research on award-winning intranet portals, and the trends that were captured for those intranet portals are going to be addressed by a lot of the things we're going to talk about today. So that's about making it social, making it search-driven, making it dynamic, ensuring that your portal pages are usable for your end users and they're sticky, so users want to actually keep going back to them. So that's right. Interesting to see that.
One of the things is anybody here familiar with variations? Or does anybody, okay, so in America, we don't use a lot of variations in the United States, but in Europe, they use them all over the place. What a variation is a language pack. So you replicate you've created a primary label, let's say in English, and then you want to have it in German, French, and Italian. What those are replications of that in different Chromes. So basically the language packs, you have to install a SharePoint language pack on, and all it does is everything that's SharePoint specific that would come up with a blank site, all the word language in there would be in that language. It does not change the content. There are content translators, web third-party translators for that. So we're not really going to talk a lot about that for the current version, but that capability is available for this as well, just in case you were wondering.
Yeah, and that capability, the variations, since we're speaking to it, allows you to create and author content in one location, in one language, and have it get translated over to multiple languages. And typically customers may use that as a starting point and then ship it off to a third-party vendor to get fully translated and then plug it back in.
Yeah. Okay. So we're going to do a little high level of the components. So first part of a component, major component, is a SharePoint publishing site. That publishing site could be on-prem, or it could be in the cloud with Office 365. The next thing is going to be your authoring site. So your authoring site is going to be a SharePoint site or multiple sites. You can have many sites, and as opposed to it used to be just one authoring site where you had everything and then you replicated. Now you can have multiple sites throughout multiple farms or multiple web apps or multiple site collections. So it allows you to be more dispersed about where your content is provided. Next, they would as long as they keep a managed metadata term set and managed properties, they use, as long as they can all share the same properties and allow it to be crawled by search, search then actually indexes all the information and it's brought back up into the publishing sites. That way your users and your devices can display that information based on the profile or the actual device.
Right, and I think this is an example of the fact that WCM architecturally has a number of components. So, you know, managed metadata, for example, is using the text term stores, taxonomy, You use those terms to tag content. You can use those terms to drive navigation. Search, of course, is ubiquitous throughout the environment. Search will pick up on managed metadata. It'll, of course, pick up on the content within objects, such as documents, et cetera. In addition, search is social. So it picks up on your user experiences, what your users are doing in the environment, what items are being clicked.
Colleagues.
Yeah, exactly. Analytics, et cetera. So a lot of different components, and I think we've got some slides we're going to
We're going to deep dive a little bit more, go a little deeper, I should say. All right. So we'll start off with the authoring and publishing side. So authoring a site. Seeing as a delay, there you go. Okay, so there, obviously we've talked about the publishing side. This would be the Office Publishing, Office 365, or on-prem publishing side. And then you would have your sites that would be your authoring sites. All of them would have to have a, between them, you have to have the cross-site publishing feature. So any of your share, content sites or your authoring sites, they don't have to be the publishing sites themselves. They could be a team site or one of the other many SharePoint sites out there, but it just has to be, have the ability to have a cross-site publishing feature, which is critical for...
Right. And that cross-site publishing feature enables cross-site publishing, but it's really tied a lot to the use of catalogs and the creation of content in catalogs and tying those that content up into publishing sites. It does support the multiple authoring environments. It's a many-to-many relationship. So multiple authoring environments can publish into multiple publishing environments. A lot more flexibility than we used to have in SharePoint 2010, for example.
Right.
Now, if you didn't have cross-site publishing, then we'd pick up content using the content search web parts, and through query refinement, we can refine the types of result sets that come back into the content search web part. We're going to show a demo of that. But that really requires proper tagging capabilities. The better you're going to tag your content and your source material, the better you're going to be able to refine your queries to act on that content.
Exactly. Managed properties also are a key that they have to share along with the catalogs, as Faison already mentioned. And I just want to reiterate what you just said. Basically, we're talking about dispersing your authoring across basically anywhere, wherever you want your authors to be, so it doesn't have, they don't have to be tied down to a specific location or a specific site collection.
Yeah, it's a great point, right? So in a lot of organizations, you may have an intranet portal that is aggregating data for a lot of different departments, right?
Mm-hmm.
So maybe HR, IT, marketing, et cetera.
Or globally.
Or globally, yeah. So what you can do now is all of those different departments can author content in their own area, but taking advantage of managed metadata, they can have a centralized ability to ensure there's consistency in the way content is tagged. And so once you're consistent in how you're tagging content, you can aggregate all that information properly using query rules and query refinements.
We'll get into that here now.
Yep.
So obviously over on the on your content or your authoring side, you have all your content, which could be just about any kind of content that could be metadata tagged. On the publishing side, you start off with, we're using HTML5 and CSS3, so we can basically use the most modern HTML.
You can use any web development tool that you're familiar with. I mean, that's a major step forward in terms of how you can brand SharePoint. So you can create your HTML5 files in Dreamweaver, for example. That's a common example.
Or Notepad.
Yeah, or Notepad if you're into that
it's really painful, the most experience.
So you can create that, and then what you'll do is you'll bring it into SharePoint using the design manager capabilities, and SharePoint on the back end will convert it into ASPX files and make it SharePointy. And that is, that's actually, we'll dive into that a little bit also, kind of show how that works.
So also on the publishing side, we have navigation elements. We're going to talk about that. I think first, it'll be one of our first demos, navigation elements. Now we don't have URLs that are unfriendly. We make them basically, what's the term you use?
Friendly.
Friendly. But it, they can ask guys.
Search engine optimized.
They're basically search engine optimized. So you can have /users/my name. And it'll be just, it'll quickly get you there. It doesn't have to be a real URL. It'll actually just be dynamically made up in the next part, which is a content, display templates, and it'll be in the content by web, by search web part. So
that was a great point, which is you're going back to the theme of integration and all these components, navigation can be driven by managed metadata term sets. Managed metadata term sets, once they drive navigation, can drive the queries that are thrown by the content search web parts. The content search web parts will display the results of your query in the web part using display templates. So it's a HTML markup, JavaScript, CSS that you can use to show content and results the way you want to.
Yep. So we have query builders, I believe. So query builders,
right.
Query rules, and also refiners. These are how we actually get inside the content by search web part and make this perform exactly the way we want it to.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of investment into the content search web part. And if you've played with it, how many have played with actually the content search web part in
Pokemon? Quite a few, actually.
Great, excellent.
Good times.
So online, O365, it was a newer release, the capability to use the content search web part. And with that capability, you have a number of out-of-the-box web parts that are tuned for things like recommended for you or your tasks, those sorts of web parts. But you also have the blank content search web part, which is very powerful. But with that power comes complexity or potential for complexity. So the query builder allows you to step through the creation of queries by doing drop-downs, clicking things, doing refinements, et cetera, and getting your previews for the results of your query. Without doing code. And the query builder builds your KQL query, keyword query language query, and allows you to fine-tune that content search web part. So we often think of things like the previous examples from catalogs were product-oriented. You know, think of a Best Buy site, and you can get that. And you can definitely accomplish that sort of a look and a site. But you can take it much further than that. I mentioned My Tasks, right? So you can do a My Tasks web part on your portal page, which reflects and is influenced by the user that's actually logged into SharePoint. So that for every user going to SharePoint for the same page, they're seeing their specific tasks. If you take that example further, you can leverage search analytics to do things like recommended for you or relevant documents. And we all saw the keynote, I think, where we saw how that story of social interaction and analytics is going to become even more powerful in the future. Yeah, we can take questions. That's correct. Right. Yes, that gives you the ability to make a list, a catalog.
Yes, repeat his question.
Oh, yeah, thank you. So the question's around, the statement was most of this capability can be accomplished without the use of the content, the cross-site publishing feature. And catalogs was a question on what is that used for? Right. So the catalogs will do a couple of things. One is it allows you to take your authoring source and the content that's in the authoring source, like news articles or product pictures with descriptions, for example. You can tie that to your publishing site. And once you do that, there's a relationship that's built where not only is the catalog item presented in the publishing site, but you can present it anonymously. Right? So you might have security on the back end, but you might be doing an internet portal, for example, and you don't have logged in users. So that's one of the things that's enabled. I think the question is, it's almost like it brings a draft and publish mode to the mix. I think the draft and publish mode you can consider somewhat separate because you can still do versioning on the source environments. And when users or authors create content, it'll go in the source environment. It might go as a minor version. You may want to put a custom approval workflow on it. But it won't really get crawled and be visible until it's a major version and it's published. And it, one, the use of the cross-site publishing feature versus the use of all of the other stuff, they're not mutually exclusive. You can use both in the same site. So So the statement was, you could effectively accomplish the same thing by just using queries and publishing lists. Similar things, definitely. The other, so anonymous is one, where you can publish it anonymously. The other is the influence of navigation. So with the cross-site publishing feature and the connection of catalogs up into your publishing site, you can build your navigation on your publishing site based on what terms are being used in your catalog, your authoring catalog. And I'll show that as well.
Okay, go on. So we're doing metadata and search. So first, manage metadata. Yeah, you can go ahead and press that. First, we're talking about a manage metadata. We have term store. Term store, if you're not familiar, again, this is just a little bit of the architecture here, is a service where we can maintain a list of terms that we tag for or use for tagging for either just metadata or also we got using it now for the navigation tagging as well. There we go, tagging. Tagging is where we tag the content in the item. Or so they take, let's say, a Word document, you tag it with a term from a metadata term set. There's the navigation aspect of it as well. You want to speak to that?
Yeah, definitely. So, super important concept on managed metadata, right? So it's your taxonomy. You're going to use it for tagging items, the objects that you're authoring. So the reason why it's important, again, it ties back into search. Search, when it goes and crawls something like a Word document, is going to pick up metadata that's already part of the Word document and then part of the full text index. So it's going to pick up things like author, created by, type of document, file. That's all kind of out of the box. When you tag it with items such as, let's say I'm creating an HR document and I want to tag it in different HR categories like policies, employment guidelines, HR stuff, right? So if I have a list of 100 documents, I'm tagging them all with different HR-oriented terms. Search is going to pick up on that, pick up those tags, those meta tags, metadata tags, throw them into the index. So when you do a query against it, you can query for things that are specifically for one of those tags, for example. So on an HR site, I might have 3 content search web parts that are directly tied to a list. The list has those 100 documents that are tagged in multiple ways. Those content search web parts can have queries that say, okay, show me policies in this list, show me employee guidelines in this list, show me new job openings in this list, right? So, but the list is the same, it's a single list, everyone's authoring in the same single list, but they're tagging it differently. And because of that, you get this different experience on the portal page. The other thing was navigation, right? So on a publishing page, you can tie your navigation to manage metadata term sets. And with that tie-in into navigation, it gives you an ability to have a level of control with navigation that you didn't have before. It makes it easy to build out your navigation, and as you create new pages on your publishing page, it'll automatically create terms in the term store and add that term to the navigation. Right, so that's a huge reduction in the barrier of entry of creating a navigation for your publishing site. We kind of talked about metadata.
Correct. Well, it's also the metadata that you don't have to have metadata in the term store as well.
Right.
You can use regular metadata on the document itself can be brought into search and analyzed as well.
That's a great point. So, typically we think of managed metadata and that centralized term set and using that to tag content, and totally you can do that, right? It's a great way to go forward. But oftentimes, organizationally, you're going to have departmental sites where they're going to create site columns. And those site columns may have a finite list of terms that that department wants to tag their content with. You can totally do that also. And that'll also get picked up with search. It won't really influence the navigation, like the top level navigation, for example, but it will influence search results. So queries can be structured for those pieces of content. And as a side note, we're talking about publishing pages and publishing sites, but you can use content search web parts on non-publishing pages. Right, so you can use it on a team site, for example. So think about a team site for a project, and you're not using Project Server, but you're just using SharePoint. You have tasks capabilities, but you can put the My Tasks web part on a team site, and every user in the team that goes there sees their specific task. maybe sorted by date due, for example.
All right, let's get to the search part. That's my favorite part anyway. First thing when we do a search, we have a content source. I hope all of you are familiar with that. But with WCM, we want to use the continuous crawl. Now, when we're publishing things on the authoring site, we're on the authoring site, when you put the new version document out there, it gets crawled pretty quickly from the continuous crawl and is available on the publishing site practically immediately. So that's a big step from the content deployment version, which could take up to an hour. You now, as soon as it's published, within, you know, it could be as short as 15 seconds, it's available for the public. So that has been a big driver for getting off the old way of doing content deployment and moving to this version.
Yeah, I think on continuous crawl, there's two different, I guess I wouldn't say SLAs, that's too strong of a word, but maybe an expectation in SharePoint Online.
Sure.
I think in the last session they were talking about a 90%+ hit rate of picking up new content within an hour. And I just tested something like this earlier today, and my content was picked up in about 15 minutes. So it's a pretty rapid movement from the creation of content to when it gets actually indexed by the search engine. The consideration around that is the fact that there is a level of latency which, in an on-premises environment, mm-hmm. can be much lower than the online environment because you have more control over it, and you won't have as large of an index. But the consideration there is, it's not immediate, no matter which environment you're in.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah,
so when you're authoring things from an expectation setting perspective, between authoring and actually showing it on a publishing site or in a content search web part is going to have some level of a lag. Most customers that I've worked with think it's a non-consequential.
Right. Some of the schools we had, we work in the Northeast, we're getting a lot of school outages because of snow. A lot of them used to use content deployment, and they would make a change saying school's closed, but it would take an hour to show up. And we had a workaround for that. But this is basically one of those scenarios where it would actually show up a lot faster.
Right.
So this is kind of timely right now.
Yeah, so that's a scenario around something like doing an announcement or an alert capability,
exactly.
Right? So maybe this isn't the ideal solution for that particular scenario, which is, actually I was just working with a client on this, an organization wants to be able to give an immediate alert to all employees within the organization. So we looked at that, and instead of using SharePoint for that solution, we used Azure Notification Services. I think that was shown in the keynote. But that's a great way to push out notifications to millions of people.
So the analytics component. Now, the analytics component's really key to this whole thing because it goes in and checks out the metadata on the documents and compares it to your profile and allows it to shape what data you're going to get to see that you have access to. This isn't the security trimmer aspect, but it will give content that's relevant to you. So.
Yeah, relevant to you is key, right?
Yes.
So that goes back to the future portal, the trends of award-winning portals, and what it is for each user, that experience is tailored to that user. Analytics helps with that, right? So analytics will give you relevant content. It'll give you content that's influenced by who you are, who you mm-hmm. know, what you've touched, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And again, I think that story is going to get better and better, it seems.
Sure. All right, query rules.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that.
Sure, yeah. Query rules. So going back to like the query builder and queries and query rules, it's essentially the publication side of pulling content in from your search index. So everyone does queries, right? So you go to search, you go to Bing, you go to Google, you search for something. This is that, but like on steroids, right? So what this allows you to do is really leverage all of the granular information that's within the search index and leverage that so you can tailor your queries. And it's things like properties of objects that's picking up, right? Again, we talked about who's the author, when was it created, what type of content type is it? Is it a docx, is it ASPX, is it PPT?
PowerPoint. Yeah, sure.
Those sorts of things. You can do refiners on the query rule. You can also reflect the user who's logged in, right? And properties around the user, like username, user role, et cetera, right? So that one
title.
Might come in. Go ahead.
No, I was thinking title.
That might come in play when, let's say, for example, you've got a a marketing site, and the marketing site wants to communicate to users different marketing campaigns. On the single site with the content search web part, you could tailor the content that comes up on that web part based on a user's role or title, right? So a sales exec coming in might have a different campaign targeted to them compared to an IT person coming in or another marketing person.
Right. A good example of that is we reuse acronyms all over the place. Like back when I started with Microsoft Technologies, BDC was a backup domain controller. Now it's Business Data Connector. OWA, we used to be Office, I'm sorry, it used to be Outlook Web Access. Now it's Office Web App. So the search could actually see that I'm a SharePoint engineer and I type in OWA. It's not going to pull up Exchange documents. It'll pull up Office Web Apps, for instance, and kind of know that intuitively that I'm not talking about Exchange, for instance.
Right.
Or at least it would let me see SharePoint-related stuff based on my title, my role.
Yeah, and it's that level of intelligence that really makes the system more useful for users, right? It's all about getting the right content to the right person without actually having them make any effort or
as
minimal
much as
effort.
Possible. Make their query more intuitive. The analytics engine is basically there to make it a lot easier for them, make it more human-centric.
Yeah, exactly.
Instead of just code-centric.
So this last item, queries run against the index, pretty critical, right? Because it's running against the index and not against the source content. So it's not putting load against your source environment.
Or the database, actually, the search database. So you are, it's faster. Usually the query index is on a web front end or the server that you're running it on. So it has a lot less latency and you're usually not going over a network. So the response time is a lot quicker than if it were going against a remote service. So there you have it. Users and devices, our favorite place to be, right? We're the user. So you got a user, and a user is known by SharePoint by the profile, its profile. So when you log in, if you haven't done, a user profile import from Active Directory, and you just logged in, even if you log in, you still get a profile, and that profile gets updated over time with your metadata, with terms about you, and things that you fill in on your profile. And that is what the analytics engine uses against your queries. The next thing, the devices that you're coming in. Whether you're coming on a laptop or a desktop, you generally come in on a browser. Now, the browser could be any kind of browser. We now actively, openly, and fully support using Chrome and other browsing technologies like Firefox, Opera, Safari, and things like that. But we are also now getting into the age of devices. So mobile devices are really popular. Now tablets are getting popular. Some third-party phones and things like that. We're also supporting them. We're making headway into that as far as we're making our technology friendly towards that. We're not being,
It's all-inclusive, right?
All-inclusive,
so,
right.
So the latest browsers from multiple platforms are supported.
And devices.
Yeah, which really opens up the ability for the users of SharePoint to leverage the bring one device trend to actually use SharePoint. There's native apps for multiple devices. It's HTML5, CSS3, so it's supported by modern browsers.
Right.
The ability to develop in HTML5 and CSS3 allows you to, as a developer, develop once and have it presented across multiple devices. I think in the next aspect of this,
as a device channels and device channel panels.
Right, exactly. So when you're targeting multiple devices, you're targeting multiple form factors, right? So different screen sizes, for example, different devices, for example. There's a couple of built-in capabilities in SharePoint to handle that. One is the use of device channels and device channel panels. And what those allow you to do is to react to the user agent string, which is basically an identifier to tell SharePoint, hey, I'm coming from a Google Chrome browser. You can react to that user agent string and present a different master page, for example, to that user, or a different device channel panel, which is a section of a page, to the user. I've got a demo of how to do that.
Yeah, this is basically where the rubber meets the road. This is where we're going to focus a lot of our time on is actually the code, and Faison's about to switch over to the demo side and show you some of this stuff.
Right, definitely. Oh, and one more on the last one. The other thing, while we have device channel panels and device channels, again, let you tie a user agent string to different master pages, for example. Because it's HTML5 and CSS3, you can also start using responsive design. So from a award-winning intranet perspective, many of those, if not all, I think, started with a mobile-first design premise. Whether they did responsive or not was a different story, but they all started thinking about, hey, we're going to go and design this for mobile first, and then think about the rest of the devices, because that's the trend, right? More and more users are going to use it on a mobile device, like a Surface.
Or an app, actually.
Exactly.
As well.
Or an iPad.
I was going to mention that devices now are getting so ubiquitous that in the future we could have like refrigerators being a device or other aspects, you know, other things like your car, for instance. I see in 10 years from now a car being a specific device. You'll have a certain car application. You won't be using your phone, but you'll be using the console in the car. So you'll have your Ford app, your Nissan app, your Nissan device, and like, especially because we're just getting so information tied to. Everything we're doing, it's, you know, it's the future's wide open, as it were.
It's the interwebs of things.
Yeah, like internets.
So I think the first thing I'm going to show is...
Managed metadata.
Managed metadata.
8, I think.
Is it 8?
I thought it was 8. Try 8. Yahtzee.
Okay, cool. So obviously, as you might be able to tell, I'm not a designer. I'm also not a developer. But what I wanted to point out, so it's not going to look pretty, but it will be functional. So first thing I want to dive into is manage metadata. And what I'll point out on the page are a couple of different areas. So the first one, how does that look? Is it big enough? Yeah, OK. Is navigation. So navigation here is being driven by a couple of things. One is being driven by managed metadata. And the other is it's being driven by catalogs. So the section on catalogs is this section here, right? So that's a slightly different way to drive your navigation. So if I go into the settings on the site, oops, not that one. Go into navigation. You'll notice a couple of different options here for navigation, both for your global and your current nav. On a publishing site in O365, managed navigation is the default navigation. And what that essentially does is it allows you to tie your navigation into a term set in your term store. So right now, this is tied to this term set, site navigation. And this term set is tied to the site collection itself, right? So when I provisioned this and I chose managed navigation, it tied it to that term set and created that term set for me. So it's an easy way to get your navigation going. So if I expand this, you'll notice that the terms are the same as what we saw in navigation. And then this term set here, the set of terms, I should say, EATS, is actually being driven by the catalog feature. And so what the catalog feature did was it created out, built out the term set based on tagging that I had set up for my catalog in the authoring environment. So from a managed navigation perspective, let me go back to the page. Again, that ties here. Go back to the first page. What happens with this, and the option you can take advantage of, is I can take this term and tie it to a content search web part. So that was managed navigation. And I'm going to jump around a little bit because, again, it is kind of multiple components, but I want to make sure we cover all of it. All right, so the next item is, any questions actually before I move off of managed navigation? So the question was, are the content results that you show here, are they security trimmed? So yeah, they're security trimmed because it's leveraging search. And search by default is going to be security trimmed. Okay. So
yeah, go ahead.
The question was, if I've got two publishing sites, I have access. I'm sorry. I'm accessing a single publishing site, which gets content from two authoring sites. I have access to content in one authoring site, but not the other. So you're only going to see the content that you have access to.
Yeah, everything that's crawled gets a security identifier or security tag for everything, basically a token for every item that's tagged there. So you only get to see what you have rights to. That's the way we've always had that in search from 2007 on, I would say.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's the same thing, like you're mentioning, if you go to your search page in SharePoint, everything you see is going to be security trimmed. So I'm going to show one more item here. I'm going to add a page to this site, and you'll notice the navigation change. So if I highlight the navigation again, we've got welcome, news, HR, products, and eats. Let me add a page and see what that does. Let's call it SPC. And you'll notice that the URL, like we mentioned before, is a friendly URL. Right, it doesn't have all those percentages and underlines and all of that. It's just a straight, very easy to read URL. The important thing there from a internet scenario is that it allows search engines like Bing and Google to pick up on this URL, right, and allow you to have your internet portal show up in search results in the public search engines.
It's also easier to remember yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Does anybody remember this SharePoint 2003 versions? And how those URLs look. If you don't worry about it. We don't want to talk about that. But they were very, very ugly. They were basically computer generated all the way down.
It's like a GUID.
Yeah.
So the what I want to point out here is now I created that page, and what SharePoint did in the background is it added a term to my term set, so I can tag content with that term, and it also added the navigation element to my navigation. So it's as simple as adding a page, right? So I'm not building out or developing a navigation, although you could if you wanted to, but it was as simple as that. And now this page is ready for me to start editing it. But I'll go back here. So I think the next thing we're showing is Design Manager?
Correct.
Okay. So Design Manager allows you to go here. Go to Design Manager from Settings. Design Manager allows you to do a number of things, and it's primarily around changing the look of your site, right? So changing look through the introduction of custom HTML master pages, custom page layouts, custom display templates, etc. So here, if I go to Design Manager, I'm going to point out the different things you can do. Manage device channels, which I'll go to a little bit later. One of the items you can do is put in custom master pages. So this is, you have this capability. From a recommendations perspective, you should look at theming, CSS manipulation, and JavaScript, other means to actually change the page look and feel in SharePoint 0365. But you still have the capability of doing a custom master page. So I'm going to dive into that. So I've got this master page called Castle Rock, and this master page it started off as a simple HTML file. So if I open up SharePoint Designer and I go to castlerock.html, it's just a HTML page. And what happened when I loaded it up to SharePoint, a couple things happened. One is SharePoint made it SharePointy. So it injected SharePoint elements into my just standard HTML page. The other thing it did is it converted the page and created a second file called the same thing, castlerock.aspx, and which you shouldn't edit the ASPX, just edit the HTML file. But a couple things to point out here, right? So these are things like what SharePoint injected into my page, different elements, different divs, etc. And the way that page shows up in Design Manager, initially, it'll show up as a preview. And what I want to show here in the preview side of things is you've got this preview that allows you to see what making changes to your HTML file does to your page. Right, so I've got this quote here. You ever have that feeling where you're not sure if you're awake or still dreaming? Anyone?
The Castle
Thank
Rock?
You. Matrix.
Oh, the Matrix. Yeah. I'm sorry.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to change some of that here. Right, so this is my, again, HTML page, HTML file. It's connected via SharePoint Designer to SharePoint. it's an H1 style, so make that change, save it up. As a side note, there's a couple of different ways to connect and start manipulating your HTML files in Design Manager. I prefer SharePoint Designer. It makes it a little bit easier for me to connect up. But you can definitely do it through like Windows Explorer, and there's instructions for how to do that. But this is easier for me. And so I made that change. If I do the preview, I'll refresh it. And, you know, very simple thing here. So the thing I want to point out here, though, is you've got an HTML5 page, but you need to make it SharePoint specific, right? So you want to take advantage of SharePoint-oriented items like navigation and the search bar and other things. And the way you do that is you go into your snippets gallery. So SharePoint has the capability of building out HTML code for you that you can take, cut and paste, and pop it into your HTML file in the appropriate div. So here, what I'll do is, you'll notice there's no navigation on top. I'm gonna go to the snippet gallery. And again, the snippet gallery allows you to take SharePoint functionality. SharePoint will take that functionality and make it an HTML snippet. So I'm gonna take a top navigation snippet, and in SharePoint it allows you to do a preview. So this is what that snippet's gonna look like. The snippet gallery also allows you to make changes to the snippet and then apply those changes to the HTML snippet that's generated. So it's kind of a click-through experience. You can change the behavior, number of display levels, et cetera. Each snippet has different configurations that's appropriate for that snippet. So what I'll do is I will copy this snippet. I'll go back to my HTML file, and in the navigation div, let me find it real quick. So this custom top nav holder, I'm going to paste that snippet. Right, so here's the custom top nav holder, and I've pasted that snippet just to cut and paste. Now if I save it back up, go back to my preview, what I should see is the navigation. So the important thing there is it's a SharePoint navigation element. And what that means now is when I add additional pages or I change my managed metadata or I edit my navigation, it's going to show up because I did it through SharePoint. So it's pulling that information. It's the same thing for things like your top level logo or other SharePoint items. But you can just do that, and that's kind of the experience as you iterate through the way your page looks and feels and changes. Okay. So I think the next thing we wanted to show was...
Content by search whopper?
Yeah. All right, yes?
He wants to know if you can manage or actually use the snippets across multiple site collections? I would think that's not gonna, well, you could put the snippet in there. I don't know. I think it would be site collection specific on that.
Right. I'm not 100% sure. The reason why I'm hesitating, so the question was, can we leverage this snippet, specifically the navigation snippet, in other pages? The reason why I'm not sure is, I think this is tied to a publishing template. So if you have a team site template, that may not work, it may not translate appropriately. Actually, I haven't personally tried it, but yeah.
Right. So the questions were on governance. How do you manage governance and prevent people doing crazy themes and things?
So there is no approval process out of the box for this specific portion of it, but you could put an approval process. It's just items in a list. It still has to go through a publishing process, so it comes up as a draft. You can see it here because I'm logged in as the admin, and so as the admin, I can I don't have to publish it to actually see the changes. But you can definitely put approval processes through like a custom approval process. You also have security. Not anyone can just go in and make these sorts of changes. No, I don't think so.
No, not at the farm level. You don't. It's not locked down that granular.
Yeah, that's a great question.
Well, you can actually make you can set up a governance policy and set it up so you have to be, the farm administrator has to approve every change to a site collection or rather, site template. But I don't know if you really want to do that.
Yeah, and there's a lot of ways to do it. And this is one example. It kind of uses that out-of-the-box capability. You can also package up your branding, WSP, and deploy it that way. Depending on if you're on-premise, you can do it as a full trust. In the cloud, you can do it as a provider-hosted app, for example, or a sandbox app. So you can put controls around that. There's just like in anything in a SharePoint, there's like 5-10 different ways to do the same thing, right? So you have security. You can put workflows, custom workflows. Mm-hmm. You can enforce it through just deployment of apps. If you do a provider-hosted app, then you can go through your corporate app catalog and have branding applied that way. Yeah. Okay, so that might be a security thing, right? Maybe you need to have a more granular security policy to reduce that noise.
Sorry, speed this up a little bit.
Oh, sorry, 26 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
The content search web part. So the next thing I want to show was the content search web part. Let me go back here. Back to my site. And so a couple things to point out on the content search web part. I'm going to go through and just kind of poke around in the query builder and the display templates and those sorts of things that make up the content search web part. But you'll notice I've got one here, results for you. It's coming back with different content. It's a custom display template, so I put a custom icon. I took it from 2 lines to 3 lines. 2 lines is out of the box. It's an extension. So let me edit this and just go into the settings. And I think you'll be seeing a lot of the content search web part throughout the SharePoint conferences, and you'll be hearing it quite a bit in the future if you haven't already been playing with it.
It's basically the way we're going from now on. It's better than the content by query web part in the sense that it's more dynamic as far as like how much the scope is a little more dynamic as where the content query web part is more performant, but it's limited to, its scope is limited to lists and libraries.
Right. And so when we walk through this, keeping in mind the idea about tagging content, your metadata, your navigation terms and how they influence it, and it's not just about your content's metadata, again, it's about who you are as you're going through this. So, this is your query builder environment, pretty straightforward. You can select queries, which are pre-built queries that can help you continue taking those and then refine them further. So that's through the creation of result sources. So like admins, for example, can create these result sources that will be visible through here. So here's an example of items matching a content type. Okay, so I want to match a specific content type, or I want to pull up knowledge-based articles results, which is through my catalog that I tied. I want to pull up pages or pictures, popular items, so those items that have been clicked around a lot, search analytics sort of driven query, recently changed items. As you can see, there's a lot of different ways to do it, but the point is it's all query driven, all search driven. So I will click this back. And you can restrict it by app. So here's where you can go in and start refining where your queries come from. So if I go a step back and think about a catalog and tying a catalog to a publishing site, that's a relationship between that catalog and the publishing site. If I step away from that and just go content search based, I have the ability to bring in content from across the entire search index. But I also have the ability to refine it, right? So maybe I only want to bring in content from a specific list or a specific site collection. So you can definitely do that. So here, current site collection would limit it, specify URL current site. So if I click like current site collection, for example, on the right side, you'll notice my results differ. right? Because it's only scoped to the current site collection. If I rebroaden it, I'll have a larger set of results. And then there's other options, like restricting by tag. So if I restrict by tag, you've got a couple options. One of those is to restrict by the navigation term of the current page. And the way that'll behave is if I had my content tagged with something that was in my navigation term, right, if I had a bunch of documents content tagged as welcome, for example, which is a navigation term, that's how I could refine it. So as users click around the page, all they're really doing is throwing queries against your content search web part. And then the queries will refresh the content, and it looks like a different experience. It's really just the same page. And then you can restrict by content type, et cetera. You can also refine based on content types. If I wanted to only show documents, I could add that. Right, and this is now only documents here. And added that. Go to settings. I can use different query rules. I can rewrite URLs. And test. And this is the query text. So this is what SharePoint is generating for you in terms of the query. So it's more complex than just a simple query that you normally do in your search box, but it is that power of refinement and getting exactly the results that you want. Right? So again, think of your page as a built out of one to many content search web parts, all doing a different sort of query. Leveraging analytics and who you are as you go through the system. Yes?
Customer refiners.
Yeah, so the question was, is this out of the box only or if there are additional custom refiners? This is picking up your map properties, managed properties, and crawled properties to map properties. So you can pick up custom as well. Okay, cool. So you also have an advanced mode. And I mentioned before, so this is the native content search web part, the one that is not geared towards anything like My Tasks, which I'll show you those. So in this one, you've got a little bit more flexibility and power to make changes. And again, it's all about refinement, right? So if you do a search across everything, you're going to get everything. But then you start refining it down, and this just lets you do it. Any questions on the query builder? Yes, ma'am.
What happens if a lot of results return, like over 5,000 or whatever?
Yeah, great question. So the question was, what happens if a lot of results are returned, like over 5,000? So that's like the large list type of thing. So it's not a list. Just like when you do a search in SharePoint, right? You do a SharePoint search, you go to your search box, and you do a search. You can have many thousands of items come back as a result, but you paginate through them. Right, so you're only going to see an X number, and you'll click the button to go to the next page.
10 at a time or so.
Yeah, something like that, right?
Whatever your default view is.
Yeah, and relevance is relevant, right? So it depends on what you want to be relevant. Is it the most number of clicks? Is it what's recommended for you? Is it highest rating? Those sorts of activities.
Oldest document, that kind of newest document.
Right, newest document.
Yeah.
Yes? Yes. Oh, XSLT? No, it's going to use just. So the question was, does the result support XSLT customization? Right, no. So the difference is you're going to use display templates, which are going to be built with HTML, CSS, JavaScript. Most people are much happier about that fact. Yes? Sure, let me answer the question on the number of items. So the 5,000 items is a large list sort of limit, right, a list view limit. We're not going against the list. We're going against the search index, so we don't have that limit. But you still want to control the number of items that come back, and you can do it through this. So your content source, content search web part allows you to control how many items to show. And it allows you to control things like, and this will answer the display template as well. So you have a display template, which does a number of things. You have a control aspect of it, and you have an item. So the control aspect is kind of this think of it kind of your master page for your content search web part. It controls the Chrome. And the item portion of the display template controls how each item looks when it comes up. So when you think of it from the development of the display template, you've got a one-time hit for the control, and then you've got an iteration through each item that comes up for your query. So the control element allows you to do a couple of things, and I'll show a simple example. This is a list, but you also have the option to do a list with paging. So if you had thousands of items coming back up, I could do a list with paging and allow people to page through it. Probably not ideal because it's a small section of the page, but you have that capability. That's out of the box. And then for how your items show up, you got a number of out-of-the-box capabilities. I think I've got a few custom in here. This three-line something I developed. And that's how you would change the look and feel of your web part. Does that answer the question? Okay. I'm not aware of templates in Visual Studio. So the question was, do we have templates in Visual Studio to create those display templates? I'm not aware of Visual Studio's templates. The way you want to approach display templates is to take a look at what's out of the box, what's close to what you want to use, and then copy it and modify it. Yeah, exactly. It's just now you're not using XSLT. So for this three-line display template, what I did was I took the two-line display template, which is out of the box, copied it, extended it to include another property to show in my content search web part. And with that, I had the ability to show map multiple properties. If I was just using the two-line display template, I would not see this last line three property. And what you can do here is I'm mapping each line, so there's three lines, to a specific property. And that's influencing how these results show up. So for each item, I've got an image, this little icon here. I've got the title. I've got the author. Here's the title. Here's the author, right? So that maps here. And then this third one was the new extension, and that's the size, right? So simple example, but if you think of it further, you can, and because you can use JavaScript, you can pull in a lot of different items. You can react to what type of item they are. You can use a different icon for each item. You can show different information like Twitter handles for people profile results. It's highly extensible, right? So it's a very powerful capability that you can extend. So let me cancel out of this. I think I was going to show display templates. Device channel panels. All right, so let me go into.
You can do the branding.
Yeah, device channel panels real quick. So device channel panels, again, going into that mobile-first perspective, device channel panels allow you to react to the user agent string of a browser that's going to SharePoint. Right? So I'm going to go to my settings. And then to react to that user agent string, you can map different master pages to it, so that a Chrome browser gets a different master page from a IE browser, or an iPad gets a different master page from a PC. Safari gets a different master page from a IE browser. And that allows you to do a different look and feel that's tailored for a specific device. And to extend that further, you can tie a device channel to device channel panels, which allow you to update a section of the page in reaction to the type of browser that's coming to the page. So here's an example of a device channel I created. It's called Google Chrome. Let me edit it just to go through the properties. And you've got a couple properties. You have the name. The alias is important because this is what you're going to tie things like your device channel panels to. And this is the user agent string we're going to react to. So this is what the browser sends to SharePoint, and SharePoint's going to pick up and then react to it. So let me actually browse this site through Chrome. Because what I've set up is not only the device channel to react to Chrome, I tied it to a device channel panel. And I'm going to have Chrome here. As a side note, you can pick up the user agent string through public websites. I did this because Chrome had updated and my version of Chrome changed the user agent string. So you want to make it a little bit more generic than the very specific like version of the user agent. So if I go here and I refresh this page, it's the same page, but here what you'll see is I've got this div in a device channel panel, and it is only reacting and showing up because I'm coming from Chrome. So if I flip back to IE, go to the same page, you don't see that.
So one thing that you can use this for instance, would be, let's say you had a Windows app that you have published. When you come to this site on a Windows phone, you could have a link saying, hey, want to try out our Windows phone app, or if you're on iPhone, try our iPhone app instead. But it won't show up for any somebody on a browser. So it only shows up for the device that you're coming from. So that's a good way that if you want to advertise something new, like an app, for instance, it works good for that kind of
thing. Or if you want to convert users from using Chrome to IE, you could totally do that too.
Yeah, if you want to do that.
All right, so that's device channel panels. Gives you a lot of flexibility on how you handle different devices coming, different browsers coming into your environment. And another corporate example may be, hey, there's a new security update that you need to update your browser with.
Exactly, yeah, things like that.
Because you're coming from,
Chrome.
Some other browser. Yes?
Yes, you can.
Because
the device channel, the user agent string, has specific details. For instance, what he just told you, that he had to go out to that website and get the user agent string. You can put more detailed stuff in there. If you look at the user agent string here as well, it's got the operating system that he's using. You could take that out and just specifically put the... the user agent string has more than just a browser. It has your .NET settings. It has your OS and things like that. But more genericized, you could just put Safari in there or the Chrome version, and you can get specific like that. It has that capability. If you look at an IE browser, it'll tell you what version. I know this because I've looked at so many IIS logs. I can tell you it gives you a lot of information. User agent string is very, very powerful as far as the amount of information it's collecting on the user itself. I don't only mean like the operating system and the code that you're using to access the site. Did I repeat the question properly?
I don't know. But the statement was around, can I genericize the reaction to user agent strings? And yeah, you can.
Specify per like versions of browsers. So IE 7, 8, 9, 10, or Chrome versions or Safari versions, yada, yada, yada.
Right. And the other thing to point out is not only, so we mapped the device channel panel to it, but we also mapped the master page. So I'm using the Oslo master page here on IE, which doesn't have a left nav or current nav. If I go to Chrome, you'll see that this has a current nav on the side. Right, so I'm just using Seattle master page here. It's just an example of not only device channel panels, which are a portion of the page, but also the entire master page is different.
Exactly.
So let me go into the next section, which is CSS. So CSS 3, right, that basically controls all of the styling in SharePoint. So as you go through, and as an IT pro going in, I wasn't too aware of CSS, so I had to explore it. You can use many browsers. I'm going to use IE, but if I use the developer tools, I can go in and I pushed F12 for the developer tools. I'm going to go and explore the DOM and explore different elements of the DOM. So I'm going to select different elements. So I can go through and see what different elements there are on the page. And many customers ask, how do we get rid of this top bar? Right, because they want to make it look like it's not O365, at least for their intranet publishing portal. So what you can do is you can click on an element, and you can see which class it's utilizing for its look and feel. Right, so this is the MSC UI top bar 2. Mm-hmm. So if I go here, and I go to the top bar, I think I should be able to do it here. Let's see. This is going to be a kind of a preview. It'll allow you to preview what your changes do. So if you look at this blue bar up here, as I change the display of it to none, it should disappear. So it did disappear. Right? So you can do that sort of exercise throughout the page.
That was the bar below the little, the blue bar, by the way.
Yeah.
Not the top navigation bar.
I'll do it again. Yeah. So I'll make...
get rid of the top bar.
The top bar is like multiple components.
Oh, that's right.
Let me get rid of this one here. So this image here is inherent or using the MS site icon image. So if I go and I'm going to make that disappear by adding a display equals none property to this style class. So display none, right? And it's gone. So to take it further, I would want to reduce the height because it's still there. You just don't see it. You may want to also leverage JavaScript to make it react to who's logged in so you don't lose the top bar for like admins, for example. But this is a good way to kind of explore.
Yeah, this is CSS. And you can do this on any website with this browser or any other browsers out there. You're not actually modifying the code on the server. You're just modifying how it's being displayed in your browser. So this can give you a preview as you write the code, how you want it to look. And then you can take this code, take it out of there, make a snippet, or make a custom CSS file, and use that to overwrite the master page itself.
Yeah. So. Yeah, exactly, right? So if you don't have to have a custom master page to get rid of these elements, you can overwrite CSS. So like Robert mentioned, this is kind of temporary. So if I refresh the page, all those elements come back. But what I did was I took those, cut and paste them into a custom CSS file, text file, right? This is Notepad++. I took that custom CSS file and I put it into the style library of my site. And so my custom CSS is right here. And what I can do then is point my master page to use that alternate CSS in 0365. I'm not sure if this is an on-premise capability.
I'm sure it is. I'm sure.
Yeah. So if I, you'll notice I've got all the Chrome and all of that here. But if I go and point to my custom CSS, which again was just a cut and paste exercise and a copy of a file, I'll go into my master page. I will choose an alternate CSS URL. Should take me to my style library.
There it is.
Choose my custom CSS, insert it, okay. And
it's all gone now.
It's all gone, right?
Took over.
And this isn't a custom master page again, right? So this is non-intrusive changes. Important in 0365 because we're always updating things. So if you change the master page, it might break things.
Right, and it's easy to roll out this these custom CSS rather than if you modify the master page and then you have missing elements or break something, it's harder to roll back those changes. Whereas
right.
As a CSS file that you're adding on, .NET, the way it works, it inherits down. So this overwrites the values that are already in there. One thing you can do, if you're not a developer, you can use a SharePoint list and just keep track of these custom CSS files if you wanted to keep a versioning. But the proper way of doing things like that, obviously, would be using Visual Studio and Team Foundation system.
Yeah, and just like everything, right? There's many ways to do it. You could also reference your custom CSS in a custom HTML page,
correct,
for example.
I did any
questions?
Yes. Does that have the multi-vector?
Yep. So the question is, if you have variations going on and you have a second set or second site used in a different language, that you would have to create a second term set? I would believe that would be yes, because for instance, the term set would be in English and the second term set would be in French. But I've never worked with that, so there is no translation on the terms themselves. So if you were to use the same management of data term set, they would stay in the native language that they were written in. They wouldn't, that language would not change. I don't know if you've ever.
Yeah, I haven't.
Yeah, being in the United States, we don't see a lot of that, so I've never been asked that question before. Maybe we can write it down, get your information, and there's a colleague here in at the SharePoint conference who's a variations expert, and I can ping him or introduce you to him if you like. Or his name is Stefan Gosner. If you ever want to, for those watching on online, you can look at Stefan Gosner's blog. It's Gossner. He's a the content deployment and variations expert in Microsoft. He's in Munich, Germany. So.
Great.
Yeah.
There was another question? Right. The designer settings. So SharePoint designer settings? So the question was, these dynamic changes, the CSS file, does it need SharePoint designer? No. I just did that in Notepad++, and I copied it into the style library, and then I pointed to that file. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so let me...
Sorry, was there another question? Yes. Yeah. Yeah, there's tons of ways to do it. Yes, exactly. So the ribbon control is slightly different, though, right? So it's most a lot of questions we get from clients are how do you hide those top two controls, and this is one way to do it that's fairly non-intrusive. Correct. Should not. Yeah, so that was a statement around you should have it security controlled so that content authors can actually see it, but users cannot. Yes, exactly.
Let me jump in back into this slide deck.
Which one was it?
I think it's main. Let's get back to our recommendations. Yeah. So just to close things up, from a recommendations perspective, and you'll be hearing this a lot, from a messaging standpoint, but configure before customize, right? If you're thinking of a capability you want to introduce it into SharePoint, take a look at what's out of the box already. See if you can configure that before you customize things, especially in O365. Like I mentioned, avoid using custom master pages. Try taking a look at using CSS to alter a page, using themes and the theme infrastructure to alter the look and feel of a page prior to customizing master pages in O365. Because we're always changing things in O365. If you use a custom master page, which you totally can, you just have to be aware things might break, and you might have to address that. And as a general takeaway, we wanted to kind of give an overview of web content management, the components of web content management, and provide a better understanding of how those components tie in together. So that was the goal.
Yeah.
Goals.
Yeah. And there's some other sessions you can go to. Delivering adaptive and personalized experience for SharePoint 2013. That's tomorrow. That's at 1:45. There's another one at 3:15 for creating internet-facing websites for SharePoint on-prem. And also one at 9 a.m. Apparently I put that one in the wrong order, which is a Search 2013 and Search Analytics. Also on Thursday, there's one on Azure and WCM. Tip your waitstaff, and hope you guys are going to the NASCAR thing tonight. If not, we appreciate you sticking out and enjoy, SharePoint conference in Las Vegas. Don't do anything I wouldn't do, or maybe you should do that. I don't know.
Yeah, if you want to have an exciting life. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you very much. Bye. Appreciate your time.